Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we are watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on Season 1, Episode 11, entitled Vortex. This episode aired April 18th, 1993. Before we dig into this episode, do you have any corrections or anything from the last podcast?
Corrections from the last episode? Inconceivable.
Oh, jeez. You know, you made that joke, I don't know, three or four times in that last episode. I guess you got it in one more time.
Yeah, it's worth getting in one more time. I'm picturing you rolling your eyes when I'm saying this. No, there's nothing really I can think of that was terribly wrong.
I'm sure somebody found something wrong, but we're going to go with it because it's in the bank.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into this episode. The cold open happens outside of the station with some kind of visiting ship. I like to mention that because I know that's your favorite part of all of Deep Space Nine.
Yes, I love the station.
All right, we jump right into Quark's, and Odo is pulling up to the bar, and Quark says, "The usual, Odo," and Odo says, "Nothing," and Quark's like, "Yeah, the usual."
This first season should be called Quark's Bar.
We are there a lot. I don't know how many other places we can be unless we actually leave the station because, you know, there's only two places to go, the promenade and ops, that's it.
Yeah, they didn't have the budget for that yet. I will say the Negus pointed out that the bar is the most important place.
Oh yeah, apparently so. Quark says he's glad that all of his customers aren't like Odo. He says his whole family would be begging on the promenade, I guess because nobody'd be ordering drinks if everyone was like Odo. Then Odo announces his real reason for being there. He says he doubts Quark's family would be suffering not as long as there's a Miradorn raider for you to do business with. Quark is like, "Oh, you mean the Miradorn ship that just docked?" He says its reputation has probably been exaggerated and he doesn't know anything about the ship or its crew. So you know he knows everything about the ship and its crew.
Like I say, no ability to do poker face.
Odo asks him if he invited them in for a free drink, but Quark says they are quarrelsome people and he didn't make his usual house call.
Totally believable.
Yeah. Then Odo says, "He looks away whenever I make eye contact," and Quark looks around to see who he's talking about, and they focus in on an alien having a drink across the bar. Odo says, "The Klingons brought this guy back from the Gamma Quadrant. This guy has a whole lot of hair, and he has some really strong ridges across his eyebrows and down onto his nose. That's his whole alien costume."
As you saw with the Wadi 2 weeks ago, Serious hair is important in the Gamma Quadrant.
That's true, but you know, the first alien that we encountered from the Gamma Quadrant didn't have any hair. It was Tosk.
Oh, that's true.
But the guy who was hunting him, he had a lot of hair, remember?
Yeah, exactly.
Under that giant helmet.
Yes.
Quark says his name is Croden and that he's harmless. Very suspiciously, Odo asks how Quark knows so much about the guy. And then that's when I think that Quark's bad poker face appeared because he's like, oh, well, he just came in for a drink and he wanted to talk. And Odo says, "But why did he talk to you when he didn't want to talk to Sisko when he arrived?" And Quark says, "Who would?" Sometimes Quark is so funny. That
I got to feel a little for Sisko and the Federation at this point. They do not seem to be having a luck at good first contact through the wormhole. Every time somebody comes it doesn't seem to work out very well.
That's true. We haven't had a single good encounter from somebody on the other side of the wormhole. Quark says all those Starfleet officers greeting him at the airlock probably scared him. The Federation could learn a few things about hospitality from the Ferengi. Yeah, right.
You mean robbing people?
Odo wonders what Croden would have to be scared about. Meanwhile, two huge dudes enter with the worst costumes we've seen yet.
Yes, two low-effort cosplayers enter the bar.
They appear to be twins, with receding hairlines, but a point of hair that comes down to the middle of their foreheads. So that's bad enough, but those costumes that they were wearing, I mean, those were bad. They looked like somebody just learning to sew was trying to make themselves loungewear. That's what it looked like. They were so ill-fitting. Yeah. It was bad.
Oh, I thought it looked like somebody had double-sided tape some aluminum foil onto the pockets and things to make it look a little bit more science fiction-y.
Well, and around their throat, too, they had, like, aluminum foil.
Yeah.
That's not the first time that we've seen what looked like aluminum foil as part of costumes on this show.
Oh, by the way, 143, we get to see Morn. Well, you get to see his back, anyway.
That's right. You see Morn with the puffer jacket. Yeah.
I feel this episode is complete now.
Oh, and the bottom part of the costume was really shiny, and it was like an upside down triangle, like on the pants kind of part of it. So it looks like the bottom part of the triangle ended right in the crotch, looking like a diaper. It was so strange.
Like I said, low effort cosplay.
I had to pause and look at it for a long time. It was like really not good. They nod at Quark and then they wander through the bar, I'm assuming to the terrorist meeting room.
Yep.
Odo finds that very interesting. He says a pair of twinned Mirrodorn just nodded your way. And Quark says that's because he's the man behind the bar and they obviously just want to use a holosuite. Then he very dramatically says, you think the whole galaxy is plotting around you. Paranoia runs in your species, which is why nobody has seen another shapeshifter. They're all hiding away. Then he tells him to vacate the premises if he's not going to gamble or drink.
Yeah, like he could get Odo to do that.
Then he whispers to Rom to bring a flask of his special Langor. He hisses at Odo and then he stomps away. That other alien that he was looking at, that Odo was looking at before Croden, he's within earshot of this entire conversation. He gets up and walks away, giving Odo kind of a look. And Odo really dramatically turns and watches him walk by.
Yeah.
In this episode, I thought that the makeup, again, Odo's makeup seemed to change. And now it looked like it was a little bit funny around his mouth, like a little bit bumpy.
Oh.
I'm sort of obsessed with Odo's makeup because he looks just a little bit different each time, as if in this first season, they're really working hard to kind of, you know, get it down into a way that they like.
Well, I imagine they also have problems of if they make it too smooth, you wouldn't be able to actually speak. Or even worse, when you actually spoke, the makeup would break or flake. So I'm wondering if they were experimenting with problems like that.
Yeah, maybe. They were trying to work through some issues.
This opening, I think, shows that Odo is quite the investigator. I mean, he seems to always be asking questions. He's always suspicious.
Yeah.
He really seems to be trying to keep a handle on what's going on. And I think most importantly, as we've seen before, let Quark know that he knows what's going on.
Well, rightfully so. Quark is up to something in every single episode. And he is up to something here. We just haven't seen it yet. We're about to, but we haven't seen it yet. So Odo is right on by being suspicious of Quark. Plus, there's really not that much else going on. I mean, there's nothing going on in Ops that Odo be interested in. So where else is he going to watch? He's going to be watching in Quark's.
Yeah, it's either that or looking for shoplifters in the flea market.
In the flea market. Oh my God. Then Odo suspiciously watches Rom prepare a tray of four glasses. He takes down a bottle shaped like grapes that looks a bit like grapefruit juice. And oh, if you're paying attention, you notice that all of a sudden the tray has five glasses. We went from four to five very quietly.
Yeah.
I missed that the first time through, but when I went through the second time and was taking notes, I noticed it immediately.
It's kind of funny because they really sort of concentrate on that. It's very much here's a big hint, people.
But somehow I didn't see it the first time through, so I guess it was effective. I absolutely saw it the second time, I suppose, because I knew what happened. But also, I noticed the second time that Odo's not sitting at the bar this time. And the first time I saw it, I totally missed it.
Oh, I didn't notice that Odo had disappeared from the bar. Oh, good one.
Yes. It went to five glasses, and Odo had disappeared.
Well spotted. I just counted the glasses, but good one.
Yep. Then we cue the theme song. Now we're in a holosuite, and Quark is looking closely at a purple egg, which looks a bit like a Fabergé egg. And the iPad turned Fabergé, by the way, into a garbage egg. And Rom walks in with the glasses and the grapefruit juice.
And they definitely concentrate on showing the glasses again.
Yes, they do. So you can make sure and see that there's five glasses. The Mirrodorn dude is saying that it will cost Quark 1,000 bars of gold-pressed latinum. And Quark says there's a problem now because the buyer is backed out. There's a question that has been raised about the origin of the bauble. A similar one was taken during a raid on a transport ship. He says if you have a bill of sale, maybe, but the raiders are very annoyed and they start manhandling Quark and kind of throwing him around a little bit.
Alleged raiders, please.
Gosh, yes. The Mirrodorn twins. How about that? Is that good? Then Croden comes in. A lot of hair again. I don't know. They got some wigs going on this show. So Croden comes in with a phaser, hair all ablaze. And he says, stay where you are. And Quark puts his hands up and says, oh, don't fire. Like he's really afraid. But you can tell he's acting. Quark is not great at, like you said, he doesn't have the poker face, right? Somehow this dude to me does not seem terribly threatening.
Yeah, you're being robbed by a slacker.
Yeah.
This is totally a stick up, dude.
It's the hair. It's the hair. He looks like a teenager from the 90s.
Yeah.
Croden says, no one's going to get hurt. Just give me that. And he points at the purple egg. One of the twins says, whoever you are, you're making a mistake. And Croden says, well, it won't be the first or the last one. And this is where you get the idea that he's maybe a little hapless and that this isn't his natural state to be performing this robbery. He reaches in for the egg and one of the twins picks up the table and just bashes him over the head. So he falls over. One of the glasses flies off into the wall. And as it shatters, it begins to morph into Odo. So there's your fifth glass.
Yeah.
So Odo hits that wall, right? And then he shapeshifts up into himself. I have many questions. One of them is, how is he not so heavy when Rom was carrying the tray? Ah. That's my first question. And my second question is, wouldn't some harm have come to Odo being thrown across the room and smashed into the wall? Or does he not get harmed if he's not in the shape of Odo?
I think this answers my question of Odo can clearly not only change his mass, but also his volume.
Yeah.
Because a glass is quite a lot smaller than Odo's previous form. And also a glass right. would be significantly lighter than Odo in his humanoid form. So I think we've answered a question yeah. there of Odo must be able to somehow adjust mass and volume.
I'm going to bring this issue up again later because...
I know exactly what you're talking about, yes.
While Odo is forming back into himself, a phaser battle ensues and one of the twins gets shot. Before the second one can be shot, Odo grabs Croden by the throat and calls for security and medical to come to Holosuite 1. Quark and Rom are hiding behind the table while all this goes on. They look terrified. Quark yells at Rom, 5 glasses for 4 people? So he would have known that there were 5 glasses on yeah. the tray, even though Rom didn't notice.
Yeah.
And that's also when I wrote in my notes, wouldn't that tray have been quite heavy? But okay, we covered that.
Yes. I think the question is, did Quark figure it out? And here they're clearly showing us that he had. He'd worked it out because of the 5th glass.
Well, he did, but also he had the whole thing set up anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know that he changed anything because he was going to do what he did anyway.
Yes. When he was questioning the origin of the egg, I think he was doing that deliberately because he'd figured out that Odo was one of the glasses.
Yeah, it could be because Rom comes walking in right at the beginning of the scene, just as Quark is about to say that there's a problem with the buyer.
Exactly.
So now twin number 2 says that twin number 1 is dead. And he makes a bit of a run at Croden, but Odo just elbows him in the chest and the guy falls over.
Oh, yeah.
Which seemed awfully easy. But now, in addition to seeing the bad outfits that these guys are wearing, we also see their very flimsy metal boots, which just kind of looked like there were these tin coverings on the shoes. Again, like a cosplay thing where you couldn't find real boots. And so you just put like some tin over them
yep.
to make them look like big boots. The security officers come in and Odo says to take everyone to the lockup. And Quark, in his usual fashion, says, oh, yeah, yeah, take them all to security. Thank goodness you were close by, Odo. And Odo just scoffs and says, no, take them all to security.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Bashir doesn't have a line. He just nods over the dead twin that there's nothing he can do.
Haven't we gone over this before that tricorders are useless when it comes to whether people are dead or not?
We did cover that in one of the previous episodes. I believe that was the passenger.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, in other words, he's not really dead.
Possibly, but I think he's dead. I don't think we see him again in this episode.
Oh, okay. I'll believe it.
Now we go to security, and the living twin, twin number 2, asks Sisko if he's known any twinned Mirrodorn before, and Sisko says he hasn't met any before. And twin number 2 says, we aren't just twin brothers. Together we are a single self, 2 halves of one being. I am incomplete now. Odo says you should have considered these risks before trying to sell stolen property. Twin number 2 says he has no proof, but Odo says 2 people were killed on the transport this egg was taken from. And twin number 2 says they purchased it from someone, and Odo asks for the name and ship's ID of that person. But he says, I'm the one whose brother was killed trying to deflect the crime.
I bought it from a guy in a Target parking lot.
Like the guy who bought the snake from the guy on a bike?
Yes.
Oh, tales of Southern California. Sisko tells the twin to get back to his ship. He says, you have my sympathies, but you can't leave the station while we're investigating.
Sisko is in taking no crap mode.
Yes. Twin number 2 says he wants to deal with the one who killed his twin, but Sisko says the law will do that.
Wouldn't this be a little bit of a problem for Odo, Sisko, and Kira? Because he's making open death threats on the station,
yeah.
and they're not doing anything about it.
Yeah, it seems like he is just declaring that he's dangerous and you'd think they would do something. I guess they send him back to his ship, but they don't
yeah.
they don't lock him down there because later we see him off the ship. So yeah, you'd think they would have done something about it. At the same time, I guess if you think about it, the guy that he's threatening is in jail, so he can't really get at him. So maybe they figure he can make all the threats he wants. And also, it's possible that they're just assuming he's very emotional.
Oh, that's true.
And so
yeah.
they're giving him time to calm down by sending him back to his ship.
Okay.
That's the reasonable answer. Yeah,
that's a very logical answer. Okay.
Except while the guy is walking away and he's kind of limping and breathing hard, which I guess is to indicate that he's struggling without his twin, he does say that his only purpose in life is to see Croden dead. So that's quite a threat.
That's a little bit. Yeah,
I wrote down that's my note. Quark says he assumes he's free to leave. And Sisko asks if there's any evidence to hold him. But Quark says, as Odo will confirm, I was just as concerned as everyone else that the egg was stolen. Odo agrees, so Rom and Quark head out. But Odo says it's curious that Croden had a Ferengi phaser and that he knew all about this sale that was going on in the holosuite. Quark says that those phasers are available all over.
Yeah, there'll be a whole selection of them at the flea market.
I don't know what your experience is of flea markets. We've been married a long time, but you and I don't think I've ever been to a flea market because I'm just not going to any more flea markets in my lifetime. But my experience with flea markets is things are just on tables that people just pull out of their back of their cars and they set up folding tables. And
that's
put
because
stuff
you
on
don't
it.
Go to any of the really good flea markets.
No,
that
I don't
go
to any of the any of them, good or bad, because they're all the same to me.
And you know how I feel about flea markets.
But when you say flea market and something is for sale at it, I picture a folding table with little phasers on it with little handwritten price tags on them.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I picture.
That's exactly what I'm picturing too. Have you got a Ferengi one? I want a Ferengi one.
They're also varying degrees of used and unclean.
Yeah, exactly.
And rusty.
You might want to scrub that one. It came from a holodeck.
Oh. In true Rom fashion, Rom says, "How dare you suggest that my brother set up this robbery?" And Odo turns to him and says, "What an interesting theory." And Quark sticks his head in looking at Rom like, "Are you kidding me that you just said that?" He says, "If the Mirrodorn ever hear that theory, I'll wake up dead one morning." And then they leave as Quark calls Rom a lobeless idiot.
I have to ask at this question, why would anybody in their right mind deal with a Ferengi?
I don't know.
I mean, it's like a guaranteed ticket to get ripped off. "Hey, I've got a really good idea. Sure. We'll sell it to the Ferengi." I mean, the other twin should have slapped the first one around the head and said, "What, are you an idiot?"
Well, you have to believe that Quark actually does a lot of business in that bar. So there must be some legitimate, well, I don't know, legitimate's not the right word, but some deals that actually go through. And I guess when you're dealing in the black market, you're probably quite often dealing with people who aren't very honest and who are always trying to get a leg up.
Yeah, but I still think dealing with the Ferengi would be like your worst possible customer.
Yeah.
Or worst possible middleman, even.
Yeah. You're guaranteed they're up to something.
And the other important thing that comes from this scene is you don't tell Rom anything.
Well, and we established in the last episode that Quark and Rom's relationship has always been a little bit shaky. Yeah. And I think Quark was, at the end of the Negus, he was looking to trust Rom a little bit more because he was surprised how devious he could be. So maybe this was his first time really trying to trust Rom.
Oh, that's a good point.
And it didn't go very well.
Wow. So maybe he was thinking, like, hey, you know, oops. Rom actually does get how to be a Ferengi.
Yes, and I do think Rom gets how to be a Ferengi. He's just not that smart, and he speaks when he should keep his mouth shut.
Yeah, he's just not very good at it.
Now we go to the jail cells, and we see Croton, and he's complaining about lunch. Odo says, "You killed a man. Doesn't that affect your appetite?" Croton says, "It was him or me, and if he killed me, I wouldn't be hungry." Sure.
Logically, that is correct.
Sisko says, "You will be tried. You can request an advocate, or you can request one from your homeworld." And he says, "No one on Rakar would much care." He says, "There are no trials there." Sisko says, "It's a shame that our first encounter with your species happened under these circumstances." And Croton says he didn't have much choice because his needs exceed his skills, which I thought was a very interesting line.
That is a great line.
Yeah, I'm not even really sure what it means.
I think what it means is he's a slacker.
Maybe. Then I'm not sure that he should be relying on Quark. That
I don't think Quark should be relying on him, no.
No, the other way around.
Well, I don't think either way.
Oh, you don't think he should rely on Quark and Quark should rely on him?
Yeah, exactly.
Croton says, "Now, if I had his talents," pointing at Odo, "I'd have no problems at all. I've never heard of a changeling with such versatility." That really got Odo's attention.
Oh yeah, this is the first time we hear the word changeling.
Odo says, "There are other shapeshifters in the Gamma Quadrant," and Croton says, "Haven't they come through the wormhole yet?" And Odo says he's lying, and that he overheard the conversation he was having with Quark in the bar, which is true.
Yeah.
Croton says, "Shapeshifters are harsh in their judgments." He says, "Feed me, and I'll tell you where I met someone like you."
Oh.
Sure.
I feel Croton is just trying to manipulate Odo.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly what it seems like in this scene. This is when I looked up this actor because he was so familiar to me. His name is Cliff DeYoung. And like the Waddy guy in the last episode, he's literally been in 1, 2, or 3 episodes of over 100 different shows. So he's quite familiar.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. He's relatively menacing and not menacing at the same time, which is also a little bit like the guy in the previous episode.
Yeah.
But for sure, he makes me uncomfortable in the way he's talking to Odo.
Oh, yeah. I think that is the thing. It's more uncomfortable than menacing.
Now we go to Sisko's office, and Sisko is saying we have to contact his planet. Dax and Miles are a little worried about introducing themselves to new people through homicide. Doesn't seem like a great idea. Kira, in the background, is literally standing staring at the door. She whirls around and says, "You're all wrong. They're going to thank us for bringing back this guy. He's probably committed all sorts of crimes."
I can see why Kira and Odo get on. They both share this very black and white view of the world.
Yeah. Sisko asks Dax to find the planet, and she says that should be easy because he was found in a damaged shuttlecraft 3 light-years from the wormhole, and there aren't that many Class M planets near there. Sisko says he wants to keep Croden alive while he's here. Kira says she'll have Odo increase security in order, you know, to make sure that he's kept alive. Then we have this weird jump to a shuttlecraft going into the wormhole. I thought that was a strange cut because we didn't really say we were getting in a shuttlecraft and going somewhere. We just said we were going to try to find the planet. And then all of a sudden we show the shuttlecraft and we don't say who's in it or where it's going.
I'm assuming that was a time cut.
Yeah, oh, maybe. Odo enters Quark's and starts asking Quark questions about Croden. Quark says he just chatted with him and he didn't really know him that well. Odo says he's got witnesses that say otherwise. He points at Morn and says, "Morn says you even bought him a meal." Quark says Morn should keep his big mouth shut.
This is something we learn in this episode. Morn is not somebody who can keep quiet.
Yeah, and of course that's the running joke because you never actually hear him say anything, at least not up till this point. I don't know if we will later, but so far you only see Morn, you never hear him.
For anybody who hasn't seen the series, I think we should keep them in the dark for when and where Morn talks. If he talks.
Okay. Odo keeps asking him what he talked to Croden about. Quark says he was just being friendly and he felt sorry for him. He tries to claim he was being nice, but Odo knows that Quark isn't just nice. Everything he does is about money. Then Odo says he found out that Quark was trying to find a ship to go through the wormhole. Quark says that has nothing to do with this, but Odo has it all figured out. He thinks that Quark was trying to get Croden back to the Gamma Quadrant in exchange for the staged robbery. And that's obviously what happened.
Yep. You don't keep much past Odo.
No. And then Quark says he's going to get killed if the Myrodorn learn about any of this. Odo keeps the pressure on, asking Quark if he mentioned anything about other species in the Gamma Quadrant, but Quark says he doesn't know anything else. Then security calls to say that Twin Number 2 is blocking the entrance to Odo's office.
Odo is really giving him the fourth degree here.
I think this is important because what Odo is most interested in here is obviously whether or not he mentioned anything about other changelings or shapeshifters.
Yeah.
I like the way we're seeing that Odo is really curious about whether or not others like him exist.
Oh, yeah.
Now we go to Odo's office, and Odo is confronting Twin Number 2 outside of his office door. He reminds him that he was supposed to stay on his ship. And behind this ugly giant dude is another ugly human-looking dude with the worst wig we have seen yet on Deep Space Nine. It is so bad. It is this long, straggly black hair, which I guess is supposed to look menacing, but it looks silly.
Yeah, my notes say bad wig guy in background.
Oh my God, it's so bad.
I'm just picturing wardrobe and the guy's like, do I really have to wear this stupid wig? It's ridiculous.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Twin Number 2 says he has to get at Croden because he killed the part of him that made his existence bearable. He says he can't stop until he's killed him.
Yet again, more open threats.
Right. Odo says he's not going to kill anyone, and if he doesn't get back to his ship, he's going to get locked up too. Then Twin Number 2 and Bad Wig Guy leave.
I actually feel bad for the other actors in this scene because it looks like there was 3 others who were part of this little pirate raider mob because you don't really get to see them, but it looks like they're in costume and made up.
Yeah.
So they've probably gone through, you know, wardrobe and makeup and they don't actually even get any real screen time.
They hit the cutting room floor.
Yeah, exactly.
But look on the bright side. Maybe they cut them because their wigs were even worse.
They really did look like they had tinfoil just stuck to them.
And speaking of bad wigs, Odo heads into the jail cell to check on the other guy with bad hair. After complaining about the lack of food, I notice he's left most of the food on his plate at this point, and he's just sitting on the floor twiddling his thumbs.
Yeah.
Odo says he's made a lot of friends in his short time on the station, and Croden says, "I guess you know how that feels." He says, "We have a lot in common. We're both aliens here. The only ones of our kind. We're each alone and isolated." Odo scoffs, as usual. He says he's always wondered why changelings were so distrustful of other species.
First of all, this guy's trying to manipulate you, Odo. Don't listen to him. He's a dirtbag. The other thing is, isn't this station full of aliens? In theory, the only ones there who aren't actually aliens are the Bajorans.
That's an excellent point. But this guy is obviously smart enough to realize that he's found a hot button issue with Odo, and he keeps poking at it.
He's definitely trying to manipulate him.
I wonder if he got any info about Odo from Quark.
Ah, so while Quark was getting info from Croden, Croden was getting info from Quark. That's a really good point.
Odo says he doubts changelings on his world would trust him, and Croden says there aren't any shapeshifters on Rakar. And Odo says, you just said, well, you implied that there were. And Croden says, yeah, there were shapeshifters on Rakar centuries ago, but they were persecuted and driven out. He says he knows a place where they still exist. At least they did a few years ago. Odo says, just tell me where it is and I'll take a look. But of course, it's too complex to explain. He'd have to take him there. Then Odo threatens him about lying, and he says he's not capable of telling the truth. Then Croden takes a necklace from around his neck, which it seems like maybe they should have confiscated when they locked him up. And he says, this is from the colony of the changelings. Odo again, top reaction, scoffs. But he opens it up, and it's a tiny purple. Just wanted you to make sure you heard that it was another purple thing. Such a purple Very show, purple. Which is great. I like all purple. Anyway, he opens it up and there's a tiny purple thing inside of it, and it shapeshifts into a little form, and then it shifts back into a blob. He gives the necklace to Odo, who is decidedly curious now about whether or not Croden is telling him the truth.
I think it's surprising and speaks to the abilities of René Auberginois that he can actually do facial acting in these scenes and give the appearance of disdain and surprise with all that makeup on.
Yeah, I'm sure that's very difficult. I'm sure it's pretty difficult for Quark as well, although Quark has an advantage, I guess, in that he can be much more up and down. I think his mouth is freer than Odo's mouth isn't quite as free. But yeah, I think when you look at it from a distance and you realize how difficult it must be to act with all that makeup on, you can kind of understand that he seems like he overreacts a lot because it's probably very difficult to act with that on. But also he does that whole thing like where he scoffs and he makes noises, and the kind of thing that would be much easier to do if you could adjust your facial expressions.
Right.
But
right.
he can't do that at all.
And he really does manage to just make that work.
Yeah. Now we go to the Rio Grande shuttle. Dax and Sisko apparently were on that shuttle that we showed earlier. They are at Rakar and they're trying to hail someone there, but they're ignored until they mention Croden. Then an alien who says he's the exarch of the Nihelic province comes on screen. And convenient that he was just sitting at his desk waiting for a call.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Some random ship that appears. I thought that was funny. I mean,
what that title means in the native language is that they're actually just the receptionist.
Maybe. He says to transport Croden directly there. Sisko tries to talk to the guy, but he says he's not really interested in any contact with beings from the other side of the wormhole.
These are such friendly people.
Yeah, not really. He says Croden is an enemy of the Rakarhi people and he should be returned immediately. He's been declared guilty in absentia for a myriad of crimes. Sisko tries to discuss, but the guy doesn't want to talk. He just wants Croden returned. Sisko finally relents and says he'll return within 52 hours in a vessel like this one.
Super grumpy race.
Dax seems a little surprised by that, right? She kind of gave him a side eye.
This was another piece of that just visual face acting that just seems to work in this show. Terry Farrell gives this sort of subtle, what the frack look at Sisko here. And it is a very subtle look. And then Sisko as well has that sort of look of like, really?
You mean at her reaction or at the guy?
At her reaction.
Do you think she was questioning what Sisko said, or was she questioning the reaction of the guy on the planet?
I think she was questioning the reaction of the guy on the planet.
Okay. All right. I read that differently. I guess I thought she was questioning that Sisko would give up that easily. And he was just like, what else do you want me to do? If they don't want to talk, I can't do anything about it.
Oh, I think her reaction was the hostility of the people.
Okay.
In summary, it's a whole planet of super grumpy people.
Well, Odo should visit. Now we go back to DS9, and Bashir is looking at the purple thing in the necklace, saying it's an amalgam of some organic material and some kind of crystal. Odo asks if it's alive, and Bashir says sort of. He says it's like in a transition phase between organic and inorganic matter. He's only ever seen that in one other life form before, and that's Odo. The stone might qualify as a distant cousin of yours, Bashir says.
Oh, it's one of those cousins that you don't talk about.
Clearly. And then he asks where it came from, and Odo says the guy who can tell him is less reliable than Quark, which is quite a dig. And then he takes the necklace and leaves.
Yep.
So we go back to Croden in the jail cell, and Croden is washing his hands when Odo comes in. He asks where the stone came from. Croton asks what he'll get for revealing that info, and Odo says nothing, which bums him out. And then he asks for his necklace back, and Odo gives it to him. He takes the necklace and says that in his sector, there's a nebula called Shamra Vortex with millions of asteroids in it. He found the mini changeling in one of them. He says he can take Odo there. He says the vortex is uncharted, but he hid there often. He found a colony of changelings there, by chance, and he knows how to get back to it.
I guess Odo is so desperate to know something of his origins that this guy is able to manipulate him. And Croton is clearly able to see Odo's reaction to these things that he's saying, yeah, and is playing off that.
Yeah, because Odo is normally very cynical, yeah, as we've talked about a couple times on this podcast. And then in this particular case, he seems like maybe he is swaying, right, towards believing this guy.
Right.
Or maybe it's just that he really wants to believe him because he doesn't have any idea of his own origins.
Yeah, that's a good observation.
Well, I think even just in life, right, you and I see that. When you really want to believe something, you do tend to lean in the direction of believing it.
Even if you're a complete
cynic. It works into your narrative.
Yeah, good point.
Now Odo comes into Sisko's office, and Sisko tells him to return the prisoner to Rakar. Odo says, that's going to be difficult because I'm going to have to get past the Mirrodorn. They've been scanning all of the ships leaving the station.
Now, wouldn't that be some violation of rules? Isn't it a little bit aggressive to be scanning other ships?
Yeah.
I think they're giving these pirates an awful lot of leeway.
Yeah, Odo called them raiders, so they clearly know that they're up to no good. It's actually even surprising they would let them onto the station.
Yeah, especially with someone as black and white as Odo or Kira. I mean, Kira's the Bajoran rep there. Surely she would have something to say about having an alien vessel scanning ships coming and going.
Well, I've never been quite sure about who they let on the station. They seem to let just anybody who pulls up into the docking base come in. They don't seem to stop anyone. I mean, we've talked about this before. There ought to be some kind of a sign up of, right, of rules.
No shirt, no shoes, no service.
No terrorists. It should just say it right on there.
Yeah.
Sisko tells him that we can try and use a departing Regalian freighter as cover. And Odo says, okay, he'll get ready. He says he'll get the prisoner ready to go. Sisko warns him that the Mirrodorn ship can outrun any of the station's runabouts, so he'll be on his own. If they come after you, any warning from us will point an arrow at you. And Odo says he understands, and he leaves.
I don't understand how that would work. If they make a subspace transmission to the shuttle...
Well, on Star Trek, if needed, someone can intercept a message. Right? If needed, then no one can intercept the message. That's just the way that it works.
Yes, that's a very good Star Trekism.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
It's a story thing. What did you call it last time?
A MacGuffin.
Yeah, it's fine. Now Odo's escorting the prisoner onto the runabout. He's got him in handcuffs, and Odo sits him down in a chair sort of behind him. Croton asks if he's taking him up on his offer to go to the Shamra Vortex, and Odo says no, he's taking him home, which makes Croton look very worried.
Finally, they're sending him home to pay for the crimes against the Rakari people.
Don't feel bad if I cut that out. I'm not sure that added anything. Oh, that was funny.
I'm with Kira on this one.
All right. We go back to Ops, and Miles now has his sleeves rolled up, so he must be working on something.
Work a man, Miles.
He says the freighter's ready to leave. And then we go outside the station and we see the runabout sneak up under the freighter for cover. And Kira says the Mirrodorn ship is scanning the freighter. Again, this makes no technical sense. If they scanned the ship, why couldn't they see that this was happening? Why couldn't they see that the shuttle was there?
Haven't you seen The Empire Strikes Back?
I don't get it.
The Millennium Falcon stuck to the back of a Imperial Star Destroyer?
Yeah, but they like attached to it and turned off their engines, right?
Oh.
In this case, Odo flew up under and then they flew off. If the Mirrodorn are able to know that they should scan the freighter who's leaving, why wouldn't they see a shuttle leaving?
Okay, I have a theory. Perhaps the freighter was carrying a super dense alloy or perhaps a super dense mineral that they couldn't scan through. So,
like Superman looking through lead?
Exactly.
Except the shuttle came up underneath and into an opening. So does the scanners only go from the top down? They don't go from the bottom up.
I'm going to pull back on my second theory, which is the story needed it.
Okay. I guess we shouldn't argue about things like that. When the story just needs it,
I think that's the whole point of this podcast, us arguing about things like that.
I guess so. I'm just looking at my notes because I have a lot of complaints about why couldn't they see this in the scan? And then I just wrote, nope, everything's fine, and they get away.
That's what my notes say. We need to keep that in. That is hilarious.
That makes Kira very happy. She's pleased that they got away. She's like, okay, pulled another one over on the bad guys. And then the freighter heads into the wormhole. After the ad break, we see the shuttle flying along. Croden is asking how Odo stands living where he doesn't belong. He asks Odo if he's happy, and Odo says he's as much a part of that place as anyone else, which is true.
He's a critical part of that place.
Yeah, Croden says it's not true. He's just being tolerated by everyone. I mean, he is really poking at him and trying to find the soft spots. That would really bug the crap out of me if a person was doing that to me, because eventually you would just get so irritated you'd want to smack the guy, right?
Yeah. What happened to Croden? Yeah, he fell out the airlock.
Oh my gosh.
The writers are really trying to make Croden unlikable.
Well, and they're working really hard to make sure that you don't trust him as the viewer. He says you can pour your round shape into a square hole, but you don't really fit.
Yeah.
I found this so strange, this notion of hatred for Odo because he's different. This has come up multiple times, right? The whole A Man Alone episode where the guys with the torches, shifter. I mean, out on the station, everyone is different. So it's like this old school theory that, right, if you're different, you will be mistreated and bullied and blah, 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 which is so true in our reality and our world. But on this world, everybody is different. So
yeah, I mean,
it just seems strange to me that they would play off of that so many times.
We haven't seen a lot of indications that the Bajorans were particularly bigoted.
Yeah.
And the episode where we had the mini mob that was going after Odo, it was because they thought he'd murdered someone.
Yeah.
But they weren't going after Odo simply because he was a shifter.
Well, but they implied that they didn't like him already because he was a shifter.
Yeah. It was the implication for that. But the station should be full of aliens. I mean, and now we're seeing that it also has aliens from the Gamma Quadrant.
I have no problem with stories about people who don't trust or don't like someone who's different from them. I'm not saying I relate to it. I'm just saying I don't have a problem with a story like that. But in this particular case, everyone is different. So it seems weird.
Yeah.
Then Odo says Croden talks too much. Which is true. Thank you very much, Odo, for finally saying it.
And tries to manipulate people too much.
Croden laughs and says, that's how it started. He asked too many questions. That's why they came that night. I was never told, and I don't know to this day. They broke into my home and murdered both my wives. Great. Thank you very much. You see, on my world, he says, the punishment for being an enemy of the people is the death of your family. I had only a slaughter knife for cutting the necks of fowl that we would prepare for supper. Imagine my surprise when I realized that I could use that knife as easily on their necks as I could on the birds' necks. Even the sound was similar. That was dark.
Yeah, that went straight to a dark place. I assume we're putting this in so it'll add further confusion to, is he a liar? Can any of this be believed? Odo believe any of this?
Well, Odo says he doesn't believe the appalling tale.
Yeah.
And Croden says that his return will be celebrated and Odo will be a hero on Rakar. And then Odo threatens to sedate him for the rest of the trip, which is what you should have done in the first place, because the guy's never going to shut up.
Croden is the definition of annoying.
But he apologizes, saying he didn't know he was bothering him. And even that I thought was a little bit strange, because he obviously knew that he was poking at him.
Yeah.
And so, but then when he said that he didn't know he was bothering him, he delivered that line in a way as if he really did believe that.
I think this is where they're trying to give us this idea of, is he telling the truth? Is he lying?
Yeah.
This is the writing thing of they're trying to build him up into this unlikable character.
Yeah, I guess you are right. Now we go back to the station and to Quark's. The Mirrodorn twin number 2 is threatening Quark and Rom. He wants to know where the prisoner is because he's not in security anymore. Which, again, why can they scan there, but they couldn't scan the shuttle, but okay.
I guess he's finally figured out what the deal was.
Twin number 2 says that this is all Quark's fault and he can die in Croden's place. Quark says he can figure it out. He can find him. Then he calls for the security chips with level 4 clearance. Remember those? Those were the spark plugs from way back in the episode called Babel.
And they still haven't changed the passwords.
Oh, there's still 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, no. We set them to 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, exactly.
In The Passenger.
Yeah.
Although, how does Odo not know about these security chips, as he called them? Although I prefer spark plugs.
He keeps them at the end of the bar in a drawer.
An unlocked drawer in the bar. How does Odo not know? How has Odo not turned himself into one of those spark plugs?
And even worse, Rom is in charge of them.
Yeah. So Quark plugs in the chips, and then he tries to hide the screen from twin number 2, but the guy knocks him out of the way and looks at the info. Then he makes one more threat to Quark before he leaves, and Rom says, oh, you're clever, brother, because he can rid us of both Croden and Odo.
Yes.
Quark tells him to shut up. Rom seems excited by the prospect of Odo getting killed, but Quark does not. And I wasn't really sure here if you were supposed to believe that Quark was worried about Odo or if Quark was just worried that something would happen to Odo and he would get blamed.
Well, it is nice that Rom can look on the positive of the situation.
That the twin would kill both of their problems?
Yeah, I think Quark was more worried about his own neck there, that he might not be able to kill Odo, that it could all end up back on him.
Well, that makes sense. In Ops, Miles says that the Mirrodorn ship is leaving. Sisko tells Kira to try and delay them, so she calls them and tries to tell them they have to wait for departure instructions, saying they're violating Bajoran transit regulations, but they don't care, and they head out anyway. Sisko is very annoyed to see them head into the wormhole.
What is going on here? What about the docking clamps that we saw earlier? What about the tracking beam? Does it not work on larger ships? What about a warning? If you leave, we'll open fire.
Nope. We didn't do any of those things.
And the way they all moved really slowly in this, it was like, come on, people, this is an emergency.
Oh, you're right. That is really weak. Yeah. That's funny because that's usually my complaint, is how slowly they all move, but I didn't even notice. Oh my gosh.
I have a problem with the writing here. I mean, it's just too convenient.
Yeah, this is another example of too convenient in this episode. You're right.
Yeah. Anyway, they all stand there and watch them go through the wormhole.
And yeah, and Sisko is, he does like a ugh kind of thing. But yeah, they just let it happen. You're absolutely right. They don't do anything to try to stop them. And I would think that they'd be able to because they know it's a threat to Odo and their own shuttlecraft.
Right.
So it's not like they couldn't do anything. Wow, you've really pointed out a big plot hole.
Yeah, that couldn't is, Kira, as the representative of the Bajorans, say that they're concerned that this is a threat to Bajoran shipping, we're seizing the ship.
Okay, yeah, that's dopey. I think maybe they're too scary. Their weapons are too big. I don't know.
They didn't actually address that, but it could be. Mm-hmm.
We go back to the shuttle now, and Croden is telling Odo it would be faster to go through the vortex rather than around it, and Odo ignores him. Croden says, aren't you the least bit curious about your people? And Odo says that he is, but he doesn't have the liberty of pursuing that curiosity right now, because he's a rule follower.
Exactly.
So Croden says they were persecuted on his world because they didn't maintain a humanoid shape. They're a proud species, but they treated me well enough when I landed at their colony. I was badly wounded. They could have let me die, but they didn't. Then he tries buttering up Odo, saying, you're just like them. You have a sense of decency and justice. And Odo kind of rolls his eyes. Maybe he's finally starting to realize this guy's full of crap.
Yeah, he's just playing you.
Then they're hit with a plasma charge, and the Mirrodorn vessel is chasing them. They hail Odo and say, surrender the prisoner to me. That shot was just a warning. Odo says, forget it. And twin number two says, then you'll die with him. Very dramatic.
This is more roll my eyes writing. Why didn't the computer even alert them that there was a ship close by?
Oh, yeah. No.
Do you think it had a cloak?
Well, they certainly didn't show them cloaking.
No.
Or decloaking. I wonder if a lot of stuff got cut from this episode because there were those quirky cuts earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, that's a good point. No, they got no warning. They just got shot at.
Yeah, and then the second part is, this is a guy who's dedicated his life to killing Croden and says, surrender him. When you have you can take a shot and just take him out, and you're a pirate.
You know I have that problem all the time in Star Trek. We have to announce it.
Aye.
Like what was the episode with, in The Passenger, remember? With Bashir saying, get ready to do this, or it was like, prepare to go to warp. It's like, just go to warp.
Yeah, just go to warp. Don't hang around.
Or even in Picard, in the last episode of Picard,
yeah,
with the Romulan who was like, prepare to do this, prepare to fire. It's like, just fire. Why are you preparing?
I can understand it with the Bashir one because Vantika didn't want to die, which would happen if he jumped to warp. But here, we have the guy who's dedicated his life to killing Croden,
yeah,
and is giving warning shots.
Okay, well, you could look at it this way. This, I feel like I'm playing your role. I'm now going to explain it away, which I feel like you do for me more often. But it is possible that they don't want to just flat out destroy a Federation ship without thinking about it. It is possible that they don't want to get into that kind of trouble. I mean, yes, they're raiders, but they're stealing things off of, I don't know, other species ships. I don't know that they would do it with a Federation ship or certainly with a Starfleet ship.
Okay. So it could be that they don't want to cross a line of messing with the Federation and Starfleet. Okay.
It's not their first reaction, but yeah, they eventually are ready to do it.
Well, I'm just going to close with the line, when you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk.
And then they shoot again, and now the shields are damaged. Odo tells the computer to do evasive maneuvers, and they show from the outside, they show the shuttle kind of flip around, but the Mirrodorn ship shoots again. Then Odo says a very Star Trek line, "I'm a security chief, not a combat pilot." And Croden asks for the control, saying he could take them into the vortex where the ionized gas will shield them from the Mirrodorn sensors. And the shields are down to 41%, so finally Odo does realize that the prisoner could probably help, so he releases him and lets him drive. Or fly, I guess.
I'm good with drive.
He takes them into the vortex, then he slows down, saying there are pockets of a dangerous gas called Tumer. If we destabilize a pocket, it will ignite and blow the ship apart.
Well, if they're telling us that, we know it's important.
Right. He turns off the impulse engines to try and stop the Mirrodorn ship from seeing them. He says we'll be better off if we land, so we can't be seen. He says, "So, Changeling, looks like I'm going to take you home after all." Odo looks a little worried. After the ad break, we see the shuttle has landed on an asteroid. Odo and Croden are in a cave, and Odo suddenly realizes that they're not on a settlement, right? There aren't any buildings or houses or anything.
Doesn't really look like a habitable planet.
Yeah, exactly. He grabs Croden and throws him up against the wall, asking how much of the story is true. He says there were stories on Rakkar about the changelings that he thought were myths until he met Odo, so he really has never met one before.
I have to admit, I feel kind of bad for Odo at this point.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a
he's
bummer.
Very desperate to find more of his kind or his origins. And I feel Croden has really played that.
Yeah, he picked at a scab, which that was not nice. And I didn't realize. I thought we actually might meet some more changelings. I haven't seen this before. And I was also bummed out. Odo asks him where he got the stone, and he says he doesn't know where it came from. But it acts as a key for his only reason for living, which is in this cave. So Odo lets him go and he follows him. And they come to a stasis chamber, which is covered with giant rocks. He's like, "Oh, there was a cave in. Please help me." So he helps him take the rocks off of it. And then he opens the necklace and he uses it as a key. And in the stasis chamber is his daughter.
He claims his daughter. I would believe this guy is a human trafficker. Is that actually the right word? Would it be humanoid trafficker?
I guess so. That would be a bummer. That would be even darker than where we've already been.
Yeah.
The kid seems to think that's her dad.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
Anyway, the kid wakes up and says that she was dreaming about him.
Okay, it really is his daughter.
My notes say, I think she may have been having nightmares about his hair. I don't even remember writing that. She gets out and hugs her dad. Then she sees Odo, and Croden introduces him, saying Odo will take her somewhere safe. Odo at first reacts kind of badly to that, but then he agrees. Croden says he's going home. The kid says they'll kill him. And Croden says it's time to answer for his crimes. She says, but all you did was try to protect us.
So this is the redemption moment? Croden is revealed to not be the monster we thought he was?
I mean, I guess. He also could have just told his kid this story.
You know, it's true.
And the kid's like, "Oh yeah, my dad's a big hero." I don't know.
He didn't want to say, "Yeah, I'm on the run because I murdered your mother for the insurance."
His two mothers.
Oh yeah. Twice the insurance policy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you're supposed to believe the story's true. And Odo has kind of fallen for it maybe at this point.
Yeah.
Well, then the cave starts collapsing and Odo is hit in the head with a large rock. And Croden looks at him. He has a momentary thought of leaving him there, but then he picks him up and takes him to the ship.
The redemption arc is complete.
Yes. This is where, from earlier in the episode, when Odo gets thrown up against the wall and then just gets up and everything's fine, but he gets hit by a rock and somehow it knocks him out. And it hits him like in the head. And every time something happens to Odo where I'm supposed to believe that his eyes are eyes or maybe there's a brain in his head, I go, no, he's not. He doesn't. Why would it knock him out?
That's the note I have as well. Why would it knock him unconscious? Plus, why wouldn't he go into a liquid state?
And even from the very first episode when somebody threw something at him, he was able to immediately do a changeling thing and the knife went right through his head, remember? Why wouldn't the same thing happen here?
Exactly.
There's a lot of holes in this episode.
Yes, it's full of holes you could drive a bus through. I'm going to say, I think it would make better TV if Croden actually just scooped him up into a bucket and then carried it back.
That would have been funny, actually. Now we're on the shuttle and Odo is groggy, which makes no sense, as we've established.
Do you think that changelings suffer from concussions?
Why would they? There's no brain in there. Why would that give him a concussion? I don't understand.
So you're saying he's like Rom? There's no brain in there.
Rom's got a little brain in a big head.
Oh, okay.
Croden says, you're heavier than you look. Not according to Rom, who just carried him on a tray. Didn't weigh anything. It was like an empty glass. Something funny going on there with this.
Like I said, He can change his mass.
It's so hand-wavy.
This is a particularly hand-wavy episode.
Yeah, and I have to believe anytime you are writing for any kind of a show, especially something that is as long-standing, as complex as a science fiction show,
yeah,
you've got a Bible of things so that you can refer to it. Now it's much easier because you just go on Google and pretty much everything is in Google. But even back then, there were books you could buy, like, you know, books about the Enterprise D and what was on every level and what was in every room. Somebody had to be keeping track of the rules about Odo. You know what I mean? And somebody must have had written down how you could knock out Odo or not knock him out. This just seems all over the place.
Maybe that hadn't been solidified yet.
That's very punny. I'm going to give you that one.
Thank you.
Hand wave. Odo says, you could have left me behind. And Croden says he already regrets it, which is cute. And then they get shot at again. He says one of those photons is going to hit one of the pockets of gas and just kill us all. He tells Croden to find one of the pockets, and Odo flies into it. Croden says, if it fire on us, it'll ignite. And Odo says that's what he's counting on. So then we see the outside of the ship. We're flying into a purple cloud because we haven't had enough purple yet in this episode.
This very much reminded me of the Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, I could see that. They were just lacking the really dramatic music.
Oh, yeah. The music was fantastic in the Wrath of Khan.
But also, this was really short and that was super dramatic.
Yeah. It was good to see some good sci-fi effects here.
Yes. Then Odo shuts down the engines and they sit there waiting for the aliens to arrive. Twin number two calls and says, surrender your prisoner. Again, just shoot, right? Why are we talking about it again?
This is almost painful drama writing.
This was a weird part too, because Odo says, I have a full array of Starfleet weapons trained on you that I don't even know that much about. I suggest you withdraw while you can. And twin number two says, there won't even be a trace of your vessel left when I'm done. And then he hangs up. Then he arms his weapons, Odo flies off, and the gas ignites, pushing the shuttle out of the purple cloud while a big flame shoots up all around the Mirrodorn ship.
I like the special effects here. It did again remind me of Wrath of Khan.
Yes. As they get away, Odo says, is everybody back there in one piece? And the girl says, yes, which is funny because she's like 6 inches behind him. I don't know. That was a weird scene. He tells Croden to get them out of the vortex, and they fly out of the purple vortex. And I wondered what happened to the Mirrodorns.
I'm assuming the ship was destroyed.
They never actually showed that, but they showed flames kind of swooping up around it.
Yeah, and there was a line earlier when they went into the vortex about how volatile those gases were.
That's true. He does say that if they ignited, it would have destroyed the other, you know, the shuttle. Yeah. So yeah, I guess maybe it did destroy them. That's probably for the best. And I suppose if you think about it, if that hadn't happened, they might have returned to Deep Space Nine.
Definitely the best for Quark and Rom.
Yeah, that's true. Croden says he has one last favor to ask. Yareth, which is the girl's name, is going to be alone on your world, he says, just as you've always been. She needs someone to look after her.
Do you think he was manipulating him at this point?
I don't think so. It feels sincere to me. I mean, if this is really his daughter, he's going to want her to be looked after.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have any options. I suppose he knows if he takes her with him back to Rakar that she's going to, you know, go into the system and maybe he doesn't want that.
Well, worse, they said they kill the family. So in theory,
oh, geez. Well, yeah, then
both of them are dead.
Yeah, then I think he's being sincere.
Okay.
Odo has this momentary panic as he's never thought about adopting. At least that was my guess. Croden tries to talk him into parenting, saying, come on, you're lonely. You need this kid. Then they get an incoming message from a Vulcan science vessel. The Vulcan comes on screen and asks if they're having any problems. She says they detected a major eruption in the vortex, and she was afraid such a small ship might have suffered damage. Odo introduces himself as being from Deep Space Nine, and he says they're fine. He asks their course, and she says they're heading into the wormhole, then back to Vulcan. And Odo says he beamed over 2 survivors of a ship that was damaged. Could she give them transportation to Vulcan so he can complete his mission? And she says, easily done.
Wow. Well, this was quite a development for Odo. He's being compassionate.
Yeah, and not only is he being compassionate, he's breaking the rules. That is very non-Odo-like.
Yeah, it's quite a departure from the Odo we've seen up until now. I mean, Odo's been very cynical and very rule-following. We're now starting to see a kind of flexible Odo appearing.
He's been so black and white, and now we've gone into a shade of gray.
Yeah.
I guess this guy touched him in a way that he hadn't quite expected, which is funny because he lied to him in a big way. But then he saved him and also asked him to look after his kid. I actually think maybe this is just a reaction to that. I don't want to look after this kid. So when Croden expresses surprise here, Odo says, don't thank me. I already regret it. How will you explain this? Croden asks. He says he'll say that Croden was killed when Twin Number 2 shot at the asteroid. Then he tells them they're going to have to adjust to living in a new society, and Croden says, like you. Then he gives Odo the changeling necklace, which Odo seems really touched by. And the girl asks him if he's really a changeling, and Odo says, I suppose I am. Then he smiles, which is very awkward because I think, as we covered, it's pretty difficult to do face acting with that heavy makeup on. And the smile is actually very creepy. So the two beam away and Odo puts in a course for home. Then he kind of scoffs and he says, where is it? Someday we'll know, cousin. Which he is saying to the necklace, calling that rock his cousin, which was very
funny. Like I said, it's the cousin they don't talk about.
And then the end.
Closing credits.
Well, that ended abruptly and
very much
kind
so.
Of surprisingly.
Yeah.
So we have been picking on this episode quite a bit. So I don't know if apart from just picking on the plot holes, of which there are many, and inconsistencies with Odo and how ships work and how the tractor beam works, etc.
And the sovereignty issue of pirates scanning ships leaving the station and nobody doing anything about it.
So many issues.
Yes.
I guess besides all the holes, do you have an over-analysis of this episode?
Well, one thing I'm interested in is the question of Croden and the planet he came from, and was Croden made into a killer by the trauma of his family being murdered?
Well, that was the story.
I mean, was Croden necessarily a bad guy, or was he a good guy in a bad situation doing whatever he could to save his family, or what remained of his family, given that his homeworld murdered his wives?
I think the implication was that he was actually a pretty simple guy who got put into some very bad circumstances.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that sort of turned him into what he had become.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to show that by the fact that he was really a hapless robber, right? He didn't really know how to do that thing at the beginning, and he got too close to the guy and
right.
He hit him over the head with the table, you know?
Yeah, he wasn't very well prepared for that.
And I even thought that when they were on the shuttle and he was telling him the story about when they came for his family and he was surprised to find that the knife he used to cut the chicken's neck worked just as well on the guys who raided on his house. I even felt like that was a purposeful confession, like him really pouring out his heart, you know, like that was a real thing that had happened and he didn't really know how to process it.
Yes, I see what you mean. There was an implication there that he was maybe psychologically damaged by what had happened in this murder.
Yeah, exactly.
And his reaction to it had also affected him, the fact that he'd killed the security forces.
But it's possible now, with the compassion shown by Odo, that, you know, he might change.
It's the line of someone in an extraordinary circumstance behaves in an extraordinary way.
Yes, but sometimes you can go so far that it's hard to go back.
Yeah, agreed.
At least in stories.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's totally true in real life. I mean, I think it's certainly true of people who, when something maybe really terrible happens to them, it does cause them to react in a way that maybe they didn't expect.
Yeah.
And maybe in a way that they would never react in any other kind of situation. And then they're able to sort of flip back.
Mm-hmm.
But that sticks with you. And, you know, if we go all the way back to episode one and Emissary, and we had that whole thing about PTSD.
Right.
You still exist in that moment.
Sisko had been suffering from PTSD for 2 years by that point.
3 years. Yeah. And maybe this guy will always exist in that moment where his wives were killed.
Or this is the point that he starts recovering from that.
Maybe.
That's a good point. There's not a lot of additional analysis I can do on this episode. It was a little bit of a cookie cutter, in my opinion, and there's not a whole lot of depth to it. It's very surface. I think we can see Odo can now shift not only volume, but definitely mass. So right. This comes down to something I brought up in the previous episode, the Negus, where he got through what appeared to be a locked bulkhead, that Odo can actually move through things at an atomic level. And we'll probably get letters about that.
Great. I'm good with that.
Okay, that wraps up my analysis.
So,
yes,
a lot of things are going through my mind. I think it's really interesting that a couple episodes when we had Move Along Home, you had all kinds of analysis about it. And I just thought it was such a shallow, silly episode. And now here, you don't have a lot of analysis about this episode, calling it shallow. And I actually thought there was a fair amount of depth to it. Yes, there were some huge plot holes, a lot of hand-wavy type stuff.
There was so much hand-wavy stuff.
Sometimes, yeah, that really happens a lot in Star Trek, and it can be very distracting from the story, for sure. But I like this implication that Odo doesn't know where home is. And when somebody kind of picked at that, he really changed, right? Yeah. It really bothered him, and he reacted in ways that he maybe normally wouldn't. And again, I think it's a little bit of that PTSD kind of stuff that interests me. And I like that they brought that out. There were a lot of goofball things in this episode. I mean, even if we just look at the costumes of the twin guys, the costumes were ridiculous. And then there was that guy with the wig that I laughed my head off at with that ridiculous wig. And even Croden had a terrible wig.
Yes.
But I liked the development of Odo here. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. This episode, I think, moved Odo along from being almost a cardboard cutout.
Yeah.
And actually started giving him some background and some motivation. And it kind of showed a weakness that Odo has about his origins and where he comes from.
And someone else was really poking at that.
Yeah.
Maybe even trying to convince him more. In some ways, I guess, when people would constantly tell Data that he wanted to be human. You know what I mean?
Really?
Like lots of others would be telling him that. And then in this way, I'm wondering if other people are busy telling him, hey, you don't fit in here. Hey, this is different. Hey, don't you really need to know where you're from?
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Would he normally think that? I don't know. Because again, he's not human. So I don't know how his emotions work or his memories or anything. And he doesn't really know either.
That's a very good point.
And it's not as if he's been mistreated on this station. Although what's funny is every time he feels even slightly mistreated, he overreacts.
Well, he is definitely emotional.
Anyway, I just thought that was interesting that I have more analysis than you do in this particular episode. First time.
That's something to celebrate.
But if we look at women in the future, there's nothing to talk about in this episode.
Well, they did not feature heavily.
No, but there was the, oh, they killed both my wives. Oh, thank you very much. That's annoying.
Well, that's kind of a Disney thing.
No, not that he has two wives, but that they killed the mother, yes.
Yeah.
But they had to just give him two wives. Why? Why did he have to have two wives?
To show it was so alien.
Ugh, so stupid.
Well, look on the bright side. Bashir was not creeping on anyone in this episode.
Yeah, Bashir only had a couple lines. Nobody was creeping on Dax or anybody else. Oh, we didn't take advantage of any Dabo girls. So
Kira,
I guess,
was not
just
angry.
Weren't that many women. No, she was a little angry. Remember, she had that weird scene where she was facing the door and she whirled around. She's still a little volatile.
She was more Kira there and just expressing her opinion.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say anything else about women in the future here. There wasn't much to say.
At least it wasn't negative.
Well, except for the two wives.
I keep on forgetting about the two wives.
That was an unnecessary detail. And the more I think about it, the more annoying it is. So okay. Let's move on. All right, let's move to thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral. What is your rating?
I'm giving this a neutral. We don't have a bleh rating, so I'm giving it neutral.
It's a meh.
I saw what they were trying to do. It was supposed to be an Odo episode.
Yes.
To progress Odo as a character. I think that they did that at the expense of actually writing a good episode.
That is really interesting. So I watched it twice, once without taking notes, right? And then once taking notes. And my reaction the first time I saw it, the one negative reaction that I had was at the end when I thought, wow, Odo turned a little too quickly because he's so black and white.
Yeah.
And that kind of bothered me. But then when I watched it the second time, I didn't quite have that same reaction. And maybe, of course, because I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to really shockingly give this a thumbs up.
Wow. Okay.
Yes, there were major plot holes and things that I didn't even notice. And normally I'm the one who would notice those things. But I saw some of them, but they didn't bother me. And I think because the thing that I like most about Star Trek is any kind of character development. Even when there's goofball plot holes, I will still go, oh, but
yeah.
I liked what they did with that character. And conversely, when they do something I don't like with a character or I think it's inconsistent or I don't think it makes sense or whatever, no matter how great the story might be, I will go, oh, I didn't like that thing they did with that character. They kind of went off track. The characters are so important to me.
The character needs to follow the motivations that have been set up during that character's arc.
Yes, I think that's it. The reason I like a show like Next Gen more and more over time is because as I understand the characters more and more, I feel more for them. And also I understand their motivations more and I get why they're doing things and I understand their relationships and their struggles with their relationships and all of that stuff. And even though we're still really early on here, I'm clinging to any kind of character development.
Yeah.
And one of the things I really liked in Emissary was how much time we spent with character development on Sisko. We haven't done much with him since, except for in the Negus episode when we saw a lot of interaction with Jake, right?
Yeah.
Which was beautiful, beautifully written and acted.
All I can say is keep watching.
But it's been a struggle to show that. I like seeing some motivation for Odo. So I'm going to give it a thumbs up for that reason.
Awesome.
Okay.
Anything else?
No, that is it for season 1, episode 11 already. So come back next week for episode 12. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on Talk Through Media. You can leave feedback for us there, and you can also listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it for me.